Hallo und willkommen zur 13. Folge von Open Court, dem Podcast des FC Bayern Basketball, powered by BayWa. Heute zu Gast Coach Andrea Trinchieri. Warum diese Saison die schwerste seiner Karriere ist, wieso er nach einem Monat alle Pläne für diese Spielzeit über Bord warf, worum es in seinem Job am Ende wirklich geht und was eine perfekte Pizza mit einem perfekten Basketballteam gemeinsam hat, das und noch viel, viel mehr erklärt diese sehr philosophische Folge von Open Court. Viel Spaß.
Und hier ist es mal Basketball.
Ja, so Podcasts machen voll Bock, ey.
And today I'm very happy to welcome Coach Andrea Trinchieri at the Open Court Podcast.
At least one of us is happy today.
Yes, because I got up early in the morning, which doesn't happen often these days. And lucky I talked to you, Coach, so why wouldn't I be happy?
I'm joking. Let me joke, please.
Yeah, you should joke. You should joke give me all the jokes you got today. This week, was it a week of jokes for you? Because obviously the EuroLeague adventure ended in a pretty, let's say, hectic and kind of strange way.
I don't know if it's hectic. I don't know if it's strange. I know that that journey is over, and I wouldn't like to stay too much on how it ended. It ended, but it's way better to enjoy the journey from day one to 2 days ago.
When a game like this ends the way it ended, you take that home with you, and you were quite literally home because you stayed in Milan for a couple of days.
I believe that every job where you are supposed to lead or you're supposed to set the tone or you're supposed to manage people comes with very intriguing job, but comes with a lot of responsibilities. So now I'm on thin ice, and I have to force myself a little bit to be realistic, to understand that we overachieved like no one else, and put on the side the feelings, the bitter feelings of we went one shot, one possession to the Final Four. And it's difficult, but the job of a coach is difficult. So instead of focusing on the end, I really want to that everybody understand how much this team achieved, how much they went over their limit. And as I said after the game, we were perfect in our imperfection. And we're very, very imperfect. But we found a way to... It's more a human thing than a basketball thing. Let's say that if my coaching bag is worth 100, or whatever, 100K, okay? In the past, I was able to use 75, 80, 85 of the tools I had in the bag. I'm talking about basketball tools. Mm-hmm. This year, I would not go over 30, 35, but the human side was 155. So, and this reflects how we played.
So you mean like tactically you had to dampen it down, but just relationshiply, psychologically, you were like...
It's not like this. No. It's you're simplifying something that is so complicated that it's even difficult to explain. So it's, we are talking about human beings. We're talking about human beings with the backpack of their fears, of their strengths, of their limits, of their skills, of their talent, of their, of how they are, okay? And when I said that we were perfect in our imperfection, we were a melting pot, a cocktail of personalities that are really weird. And so, you know, you can have as the motor of your season is the basketball, okay? X and O's. I'm a basketball coach, so I'm supposed to use that. Okay? But this year, the motor was put together a very different group of players. And that was more from the human side. We met on the court more as humans than as players, accepting failures, accepting mistakes, accepting lacks, and maximizing strength. This is the ultimate way I see the word team. Every team has lacks, every team has strength. The ultimate way to do it is to hide lacks and maximize strength. And we did it on the human side. That is a lot more difficult than on the basketball side. Because basketball starts practice at 11, over at 4, and the rest of the day, you know, maybe some flashes, but you have your life. The human side is 24/7. Because you cannot go home and forget a word. You cannot go home, forget a behavior, forget somebody that is helping you, something, somebody that is asking for help, somebody that is struggling, somebody that is rolling, somebody that is pushing you. This is a full load.
But how can a coach like you are?
I mean, I have no clue. Believe me.
Okay.
I don't know.
But what are you doing? I mean, what are you doing to take care of this human side? Because you got the players in practice. Obviously, you can call somebody, text somebody. But isn't like what you describe something the team has to take care of itself, that players take care of each other?
No, it's... let's talk about education we had. My education was, I can say, good education. And my parents taught me that there is the right way and there is the wrong way. Okay? There are things that are supposed to be done in one certain way. Okay? And there's no a lot of compromise about that. Okay? And I believe that was good for that age. Now, everything is situational. Everything is quicker, no roots. The society is like this, not the basketball. So it's everybody is close to failure quicker. It's exposed to failure quicker because all the social media, all the things that we are, that are part of our life now, expose you to a judgment every single second of your life. 20 years ago, the judgment was maybe 3 times in a season. Okay, one bad game, oh, I have another one, you know? Mm. They will forget this bad game. There won't be millions of views of my mistake. So now, I'm more than coaching, I'm navigating through the situations. And you cannot have a plot. You cannot have a team of the season, the theme of the season. You have to navigate situations. And every situation requires a different behavior and a different reaction. That means that there's no, oh, the thing should be done in this way. No. It's not like this anymore. So you try to navigate the things and to, like a captain, to bring, to drive your boat to the harbor, the ship to the harbor, through rough seas, winds, rocks, and everything.
But if you're a captain, obviously you have to have a team on the boat that knows what it's doing and which stays together. I can imagine.
It's not like this. It's not like because this. One day,
yeah,
maybe the one that is supposed to put the sails in a perfect way is not his day. And what we do.
But isn't it then isn't it the team that comes in, and like you talked about strength and weaknesses, isn't it the team that comes in and then says, all right, this guy today, he has a bad day. He set the sails the wrong way.
Yes, but then you surrender to the bad day of one guy.
Yeah, but still, the team has to cover for that one guy. Isn't that the definition of team? Yeah.
But this is the most difficult thing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
it's find a different way with one missing part.
Yeah.
This is situational.
And I can imagine it's tough to get a group of players, because when they come in and they're all individuals, when they come to Bruneck, it's not a team yet. Mm-hmm. And then it has to become a team. And I can imagine that, especially this season, which was like, I think was, to me, looking from the outside, looking in, it looks like a marathon, but you have to sprint every 100 meters.
Exactly.
And
that is a very good metaphor, because this is a marathon, but there is a sprint every 48 hours. And but the same, you said, to make them a team, I didn't go through the basketball way. Or I just go it partially.
Yeah.
I tell you the truth, what I did in the first 40 days, I just put it in a bin and throw it in the rest mode.
Mm-hmm.
All the stuff I thought was the right thing for this team, after 40 days, I just said, like Roberto Duran, no mas.
But you kept fighting. Roberto Duran didn't keep
if
fighting.
If I wouldn't do it, you won't be here to talk to me.
So when you threw everything out, did you know what you had to do, or was it just a try and error thing?
I know what was my priority. What were my priorities? I know where I want to go. Okay, I didn't know how. It was every day a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to make this team better. Better every day. These players better, this team better. And then the scoreboard will take care of itself.
And it did. I mean, early in the season, especially in EuroLeague, you racked up the wins. You said, don't wake me up. Mm. This is like a dream. From what I heard now, you must have been pretty surprised when it went that well during the early part of the season. Or was it something that you saw on the team?
Surprise is not the right word. I thought that we could do something, and the margin was small. So many things should go in a specific way. Many parameters of the team should go in a specific way in order to be successful. Okay. And was a very small margin, but there was a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And because we had different geological eras in our season. So we started with, ooh, wow, we can play. And then the topic was, don't wake me up. But then, games after games, we woke up and we had to maintain that level. And then it was a different championship, a different league, a different way approach to the games. Because let's say in the first five games we surprised other teams, but then you cannot surprise other team for more than 5-6 games. Then we had to reshape our mentality. Okay, the first was, okay, let's go, let's shock the world. Okay, and then it was over. Now survive and advance. And then when we were close, we were overwhelmed by the pressure, and that was just survive to make a dream reality. And then we go to play the playoffs, okay? The first game that we lost could kill any team in the world. And the biggest success was going there to play game 5 after that loss. basically we won the game. Only one play was not executed in the proper way, and this happens. We are human beings, and this could kill an elephant. And we were a little bit like so-so in the second game, but still we fought, because usually you lose by 30 game two. It's if you go to the
history.
It's always like this, you know. You were so close, basically you won. So in my opinion, we won the series 3-1, but it's a different thing. So I have to be situational, and I have to understand how big was our effort to win two games in a row in that way with two guards out of the roster, where Milano's strength is in the guards. So to play in a different way, to create different things, you know? And but I'm really thankful, and I would say, I say it slow, very, once, very silently, I would say happy, kind of happy, because I don't look what we got, I look what we deserve. And for how we played, we deserve the respect, and we deserve to go to the Final Four. And this is enough to survive.
This seems to be a very, very, well, for lack of a better word, mature way of handling this. Would a younger Andrea Tinchieri handle it the same way? Or would he just
the younger won't be here. Won't talk with you about this, because he won't have the opportunity to make these things. You know, experience is a value.
Yeah. But I mean, like, but did you take losing harder in the past than you do now? No. Because of this experience?
Losing is still a problem.
Okay.
And it will always be. Mm. But when you have a leading role, you bring also responsibilities. And you cannot think and act like an individual.
So you have to be strong, looking forward for the team.
You have to hold the burden on your
face. Yeah. It sounded a little bit that you kind of have like different seasons within a season this year. The way you were talking about, look,
like, it is the most demanding season I ever had.
Yeah.
You don't sleep for 3-4 days, then you sleep for 14 hours in a row, like you're dead. As soon as you can really have half of a day of relaxing, and was demanding for the schedule, was demanding for the COVID, the travels, the level, and also I had a demanding team. It was not easy, believe me. It was not an easy job to put them together.
I can also imagine that when you play in the EuroLeague during the week, and then on the weekend it's a BBL game. I mean, you're a perfectionist. Is there time to actually prepare for this game?
We never had, and this is something that bothers me a lot.
Mm.
Because basically 92% or 90% now of the BBL game were within or less 48 hours of the EuroLeague game, with all the things that are coming from this.
Yeah.
And this is a problem, but we're still alive, and we'll try to be ready for the last part of the season.
You talked about that the team was demanding in a way. I guess that a couple of players obviously needed some, I don't know, maybe special attention. In a season like this, where you sprint from game to game, do you even have the time to go to individual players and to kind of, you know, give them the attention they need or you need to give them in order for them to reach their maximum level? Or is it Is it something you have to relegate or delegate to the team or to assistant coaches?
No, I believe that there are two things. One thing is that I have an amazing staff and I delegate a lot, okay? And we have unbelievable chemistry and everybody's different. We don't have all the same and we don't have yes men. We have people that is thinking, people that has an opinion, and we always go in a discussion because I want to hear different things. And my coaches are totally free to talk individually with every player. And I try, of course, to always have every day at least 1 minute with every my player, you know, at least every day. You know, could be talking about how to make pasta or talking about how to guard this player or how to prepare for this game. And, you know, it's cannot be only basketball.
Is that a way to, is it that, you know, when you not talked about, talk to them about basketball, is it maybe one way to earn their trust early in the season? That you can maybe if you, you know, get to them in another way that you can maybe sell them stuff on the court easier?
Trust is the most difficult thing to earn and the easiest thing to lose. And I try to care about my players as players and human beings. I'm very demanding. I put pressure a lot. Some of them like it, some of them less. But I believe I told them always, don't focus on how I deliver the message. Focus on the message. And because I believe most of the times I got the point when I say something to my players. And I will not say every time, but I believe it's every time because this is my job. I have to know more than them about the situations we're talking about. And it's called tough love, okay? And I see, for example, one player, it took him months to cope with me. But it's so big and so fulfilling, the thing that J.J. Johnson played this kind of playoff series. After struggling because I was on him, he never had this kind of coaching, or he had not enough time, this kind of coaching. Talking about details, talking about wrinkles, talking about how to put the foot in a specific situation. Players sometimes just, coach, let me play. I want to play. Let me play. Yes. If you are the best, you can just go out there. LeBron can go just out there and play. But if you're not the best, you need to have all the other small things that allows you to compete with the best. So I believe this is a postcard of what we're trying to do. And I'm so happy for the situation and for the player.
And I think at one point, a lot of the fans don't really see that. I think fans see, all right, this guy can shoot the three, you know, he can go to the hole, whatever. But decision-making and all the little things, that's even bigger part, right? I mean, obviously, if you can't shoot, you can't play. Or if you can't make a layup, you can't play. But I think this is the one part a lot of people don't see, that all this, the knowledge of the game is so much more important than most of the other stuff, right?
This is, I cannot think how it would be without this. You know, it would be something that I don't like to watch, something that is not competitive, something that is just, but decision-making, it's not, it's a package of things. First of all is you have to have a purpose every day. most of the players, if you ask them, what is your goal for today? Have a good practice. Sorry, it's too general. What it means, a good practice. Maybe what is good for you is not good for him. Okay, go hard. And I said, sorry. Go hard is the minimum requirement to be here. Otherwise, I go on the street and I say, can you come here, get the money, and go hard? Everybody will say, I go hard. So have a purpose. It's not for granted. Have a purpose is, okay, I'm not good, so good going left. I will use this practice to go left every time to improve this. I'm not good in reading this kind of coverage. Maybe the coach can put me this kind of defensive coverage so I can improve. This is having a purpose. And it costs energies, physical and mental, more mental than physical. So this is the first thing. So is how you get to do your job every day. Every day. So there are players that first 10 days of the season work, they have a routine and do a specific shooting drill, okay? Or a specific dribbling drill, or a specific pick and roll drill, okay? And then they don't do it for 8 months. Then it comes the important game and they do it again. What is this? It's missing a chance, missing the opportunity. Don't do whatever it takes to be better. Then it comes reading, reacting, decision making. But before you have attitude, approach, having a purpose, having a goal, on a single day, on a single practice, on a single part of practice. And I met very few players with this vision. And they are all superstars.
And the thing is, you know, players to say, I heard a lot when I coach, I'll just let me play. But, you know, if I give you the right tools, that's what you will do. You will just play. It's just this time where you have to, you know, learn all the stuff. And once you learn it
would be, it's a fairy tale what you're saying. It's not like this.
Yeah, but I mean, if you take a player,
I believe every coach is trying to give the right tools.
Yeah, yeah.
But the first thing you have to do is find a way to deliver
sure,
the message.
Yeah.
Because sometimes players doesn't see these right tools.
Yeah, and obviously you have to earn their trust, that they trust you to give them the right tools, right?
It's difficult.
It's difficult. I'm not saying it's easy, but what I'm saying is that if you learn more and more about the game, it becomes your game. It's not like you have to think before you do stuff, but then you just play what players want to do, right? I mean, in a way, that's just the way it has to be. You have to learn stuff. It has to be hard to get easier.
But what if you don't think that you have to learn?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You have to earn the trust of the player so he thinks, oh.
Even if you earn the trust of the player and he thinks that he doesn't have to learn.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. I mean, the player trusts you when you tell him, look, you need to learn this because it makes you a better player.
Whatever.
Yeah, that's
whatever.
It seems to me like you heard this a lot this year, the way you...
No, this is my career.
Your career.
This is a problem.
Yeah.
The problem is how many players you know that underachieved according to their talent? Plenty?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
One of these reasons.
You know who you remind me of? You remind me of Bob Knight, who always said, like, oh, practice has to be harder than the game.
Yeah.
And you know,
he didn't practice this season, so that was in my past life.
Yeah. But that, he always said you have to build up the mental toughness. You know, all five players on the court need to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on a pick and roll, everybody needs to know where the guy's coming off the pick.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody needs to know what pass is going to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's kind of a romanticized way to think about it, right? Because these guys back in the day had like practice over practice over practice. And like you said, this year, you guys hardly practice at all. So
I was using part of the games to
practice,
to teach.
Yeah.
I was trying. And this is the reason, because everything is situational. So you cannot prepare. So we had this, we were not, we were ranked 18 in the EuroLeague. So we need basically a lot of practice to find a way to compete. We didn't have that luck, so we had to find, everything was situational. I was playing, I was coaching 5 different games in the same game. I had to adapt.
Still, you were always, from outside looking in, always the same Andrea Tinkieri. You were always like very emotional. And I was always wondering, you know, this guy's not practicing with his team. Obviously, he is demanding. He wants to get stuff done the right way. But I can imagine, isn't it hard to be like emotional when you see a mistake, when you know we haven't really practiced all that much, and maybe I cannot really expect it to be right. And I mean, isn't it tough to get emotional if you know all these things that are happening that don't really let you coach the way you want to coach?
You are saying something that may sound right, but you forgot one important thing. You're playing a game with an opponent in the best competition outside the NBA, and you don't want to lose. Who gives a fuck about practicing or not practicing? Can be true, but you still play the game. It's not that, oh, we could not practice, we don't play the game.
Well, sure, playing the game, sure, yeah.
So?
Yeah. But maybe I have to phrase it a different way. I think I would kind of feel helpless if I could come into a game and wouldn't have been able to practice the things with my team, which I know we have to practice. And then we make a mistake.
Helpless?
Yeah.
From X and O's.
Yeah.
Not helpless from mentality.
No, sure, yeah, yeah.
Attitude, team spirit, values.
So do I send you right?
You shift the thing.
So you were emotional about mistakes in that area, no, and not as much as this note.
When there is a mistake, I'm always pissed.
Okay.
You practice, you didn't practice. Because I try to cover and to maximize the time in the best possible way.
Mm.
And very rarely something happens without us touching that topic. Very rarely. Okay? Still, if you cannot have the practice, maybe you can have bonds, you can have chemistry, you can have man up. And this is how we played.
How will the season change for you from that respect now that it's only BBL and the top four?
I don't know. I will use these days to come with a plan, to regenerate, to use the experience as an advantage, and I believe that the best thing that can happen to a player is to play for titles. And we have the opportunity to play for 2 titles. Of course, this EuroLeague campaign killed us physically, killed us mentally with injuries, but we will find 5 players. Hopefully they will have the desire to compete. Now, I don't touch them for... I don't have to address anything in these 4 or 5 days after game 5. I want that the things goes out from them naturally without me forcing the things. And for sure I will come with a goal for every day. Then we will see who is gonna take the challenge.
So you don't really have a plan yet how much you're going to practice, what you're going to focus on in practice.
I have a plan.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
Sure, we will. I believe that we have 2 more practices until the end of the season, real practices.
2?
Yes.
But I mean, fans will say, well, maybe they just play once a week now. Why would you only practice two times?
You are not correct. We play today.
Yeah.
We play Sunday. So then we play Saturday. So the two practices will be, real practices will be next week.
Oh, you mean until the playoffs?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry, my mistake there.
Yeah. In the playoffs, there won't be practices because you play every day.
Yeah.
This is the latest I heard. Back to back every day.
Back to back every. Oh, I didn't hear that. So then it's basically the same as before, right? So it's just surviving again.
Yes.
Wow.
Surviving and advancing.
Is there anything you've learned this year with this sprinting marathon, which you can take to further seasons?
There's no substitute for when you build a roster for toughness, physical and mental toughness. There's no substitute for, you cannot play without athleticism. And I have a couple of things that are growing in my head about, but I want to see the end of the season to put everything together.
Mm-hmm. So
about philosophy, strategy, and all this thing.
You said that it's the best for players to play for titles. Is it the best for coaches too?
Of course.
I mean, obviously,
it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, but I mean, there are coaches who say, like, I just want to teach. Now, I go to this club, you know, we're the end of the league, but I want to teach young players, whatever. I'm not in it for the titles.
Nice dream. Maybe on Disney Channel.
I mean, there are a lot of coaches who...
No, there are not.
Because who are in this situation.
They got fired after two losses.
It's a little harsh, but I know what you're saying. So you're in it for the title. So what would be success for you after the season? Is this something that you really look at the titles at? Do you look at the team and how you... Yeah.
I had the luck to win titles, so I know the feeling of winning and losing, okay? And I will never let anybody define my success. It's something that it's mine and will remain mine. So the success is not winning a title, because to win a title, there is a lot of things that has to click. And there are a lot of these things that you cannot control. I always say you can win a decisive game with a lucky shot, and maybe in that game you were not the best of the season. And you can lose a decisive game just because your best player got an injury at the first moment, at the first possession of the game. But you did an amazing job. So I had somebody else to define if I was successful or not. No way. Success is doing the best you can every day and taking the best out of your players and of your team and make them better. So this is not a successful season. This is more than a successful season. I had only Lucic and Gist with EuroLeague experience. Okay? Real EuroLeague experience. So I lost Jedovic right away. And they are all better than what they are. Everybody. Šiško was not dressing for the bubble last year. For the BBL. So, this is not a successful. This is more than successful.
I love that approach because, obviously, we're living in an analog world. It's obviously, it's on and off. There seems to be nothing in between anymore. And I like that you...
But don't underestimate one thing. I want to win.
Sure,
But I will not let anybody define the success. Because who has to see what we are doing, who knows, understands everything. Who doesn't know what we are doing, I don't have to explain him.
Still, it must have been liberating to get to that point, to realize that it's more than... Because on one hand, it is wins and losses. On the other hand, it's so much more.
It's archaic. It's all about winning. I believe it's 50 years old.
But still,
Vince Lombardi said it's all about winning.
Yeah, winning isn't
winning is everything. And losing, winning is a habit, but also losing is a habit. Yeah. But it's all about the process.
And speaking of a process, I think it's a process to realize that. Because as young coaches, I think people think, all right, it's winning. I need to win every time to be a good coach. But I think the older you get, the more you realize.
Maybe if you reshape to win the day, you have to win the day with your players. That they have a purpose. This is winning. No, the game. Sometimes you can be very good and not win. Sometimes you can be sloppy and win the game.
When will you be able to relax? Is it after the season, or does it just go right into the next for you?
I don't believe I'm going to be able to relax. not now.
But one day it will come, right? Or do you think this season is going to, you know, be with you right into the off season, and then the next season is going to start?
Still too many things to do. I cannot see the end of the season so close. And a lot of things. I cannot imagine when I will relax, telling you the truth.
What do you do to relax during the season? Is there anything you go to really unwind?
I believe relax for a couple of hours is one thing. Relax, it should be when the season is over. But I love to cook, to drink wine, good wine, to do two things together, cooking and drinking wine. You know, we often cook, the coaches cook the game, day game. We do pizza, we do some other stuff. It's you relax with good people around you, talking about different topics in front of a good meal and a good glass of wine.
That will be my next question, because I built this little basketball court in my garden, and whenever I can't take it anymore, I just go outside, the weather's right, and just shoot, and then it's just that. It's just the ball, the hoop, I shoot, and that's it. I think about nothing else. But I knew if I would be in the kitchen and cooking whatever, my mind would wander to other things. Is for you cooking like basketball is for me, you just concentrate on cooking, just concentrate on the wine, or do like basketball thoughts creep in?
There are many similarities between a bottle of wine and a player cooking a meal and preparing a game.
Well, that even makes it harder to really not think about basketball, right? I mean, if you...
No, that 2 hours, I can really focus on what I'm doing. So manual stuff helps a lot.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, just concentrating on your hands and whatever. So when you really want to unwind after the season, what do you do then? You travel? Do you spend time with the family? What's there to really just get everything out? Or is it even possible to get everything out and just for a couple of days just not think about basketball?
My ultimate thing, it's a desert beach with a good book. Nothing else.
What was the last book you read on a deserted beach?
Oh, I read again, because I already, 10 years ago, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, LaPierre Collins, the history of the city of Jerusalem, that is really, really intriguing and complicated. But then I read this was the latest serious book. Okay, then I read thrillers, then I read whatever. Believe me, there are some books of some creamy. You say creamy
yeah.
Books of Milano. You know,
oh, okay.
And of areas of Milano where I've been when I was growing up. So I like, you know, to read something I saw.
Ah, okay. So you know where it's happening.
Yes, that shop in that place. Now there's no more, but 20, 30 years ago, the shop was there.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you have anything that kind of substitutes the competition? You know, when there's no basketball? I mean, no, I don't know if you play video games with your sons or anything.
No. Sometimes when I travel, I play some strategy games to
on your computer or
on an iPad,
yeah.
Okay, on a tablet, and but I love all sports. So after a game, I stayed home for one day, and I went to see a tennis tournament that was close to my house.
Okay.
Not high level, but you know.
Yeah, but competition, yeah.
Mm-hmm. My son was playing there, so.
Oh, okay, perfect. So do you think that there's ever going to be anything? Because with players, we always say, all right, when they have to leave the game and they retire, there's this void. You know, they don't have the competition anymore, and they don't know where to get that fix, you know, where to get that adrenaline. Obviously, with coaches.
I don't have that problem. I have competition in everything.
Okay.
When I play ping pong, when I play cards, when competition is part of my life.
But still, I would guess that you are not as emotional when you lose in Tisch tennis to your son than losing in Kaunas.
Now he's getting better than me on tennis, so I'm a little concerned.
Because I think it's fascinating because I used to play a little bit, like second league. I was a coach a little bit. And after I left all that behind, there was this void. I was like, how do I get my pulse even up? You know, obviously, yeah, I like competition.
I believe that people like us are addicted to competition. And it's like when you don't have your drug.
Yeah.
It's difficult. So you try to compete on everything to keep it in the right way.
Well, the next question would be, is it a good addiction or is it a bad addiction?
I didn't choose it.
Me neither.
Bad or good is like, it is what it is.
Because I feel like on one hand, the sport, it just gives you so much and the competition gives you so much. On the other hand, there was a lot of times where I felt like, wow, it kind of ruined everything else for me. You know what
okay,
I mean?
Okay, but wisdom comes with the years.
Yeah.
And if you see, if you focus on the journey and not on the stops, I believe that the journey will be your competition to keep this journey going on. And then you will have less bitter feelings about the winning or losing. So to me, keep the journey alive. Don't focus on the stops is my competition.
And I think one great thing about coaching is that it's not a journey you go alone. I mean, you obviously have the team, and you always, like you said, you're the leader. You have this responsibility for the team. And one thing I always found fascinating that I heard from, even now today, I hear from players I coach like when they're like 12 years old. And I think it's one of the most underrated parts of the profession, if you will, that you touch people's lives and you kind of, I don't know, educate them. Or I know, kind of touch them and kind of lead them in the right direction,
it's true
hopefully.
What you say, but how many of these people that you touch their lives understood at the right moment that you are touching their lives?
I think it's the same what you said, right? It's wisdom comes later. I mean, people just... one thing I learned from the youth players I coached, that they, I think they understood what you were doing a lot earlier than maybe players who were already seniors. Because they have I think they have more appreciation of you teaching them how to play the right way, if that makes sense.
it often happens to me that players that I coach and we had hard times. After 1 or 2 years, called me or they wrote me and said, I didn't understand at that time how important was what you was trying to do. Okay, and I'm good with that. I cope. I know it happens because ego is a big thing. It's very difficult to check our own ego. And I have to check my ego too. And but it's a really fulfilling when a player that you discuss, you fought for 10 months and you have the feeling that you didn't make it to go through and to deliver the right things, after 1 year calls you and said, I understood now. It's fulfilling. It's hard to swallow the year before, but these happen very often.
And these are like the small, I wouldn't even call them small, it's like delayed victories, right?
No. This is just things that say you're doing the right thing.
I mean, maybe victory was the wrong word, but it's something that
a boost,
yeah,
of what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's boosting the process. Keep doing that.
Yeah. It's kind of reaffirming.
Yes. Yeah. And the same time you said, I always ask myself, what I could do different to make this process quicker?
I think it's so fascinating that this is just, I mean, it's a very inexact science, right? I mean, obviously you can learn coaching at universities or whatever, but at the end of the day, it's a lot of psychology. It's a lot of, like you said, it's like very individual moments with individuals.
No, I'm telling you the truth, that the only way to learn how to coach is to go to see how other good coaches coach.
The clinics, yeah. I mean, I think at university you learn like concepts, you know, like you have to go from the easy parts to the harder ones.
What you go to the university is they give you the tools to try to become a coach.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
But then you have to see how to use the tools.
Yeah. Talking about clinics, who are your inspiration? Who were like the coaches where you took the most from when you were a young coach?
Everybody.
Yeah.
I went to million of clinics. I went to million of practice of other coaches. I learned how I would do one thing, and I learned how I will never do one thing. So this is the problem in Germany.
Oh, that there are not enough clinics?
Not passionate enough.
Hmm. Is it different in Italy?
Of course. At every practice, you can have 40.
Oh, people coming in that kind of, yeah, I get it. It was great. I was able to be at Greg Popovich's clinic when he was in Berlin with the Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just, I mean, obviously it was very, very...
I wasn't there, but I have the...
Oh, yeah, it's a solid tape, yeah. And the one thing that struck me, that they were starting out, you told me, I actually asked him about it, he said, well, every year we start out, we with jump stops. We have our players line up at the baseline, they run to the free throw line and they jump stop and they pivot. And I was like, well, this is like an under 10 practice, no, drill. And he's like, yeah, but we're still doing it every year because we have to start from square one. And I thought that fascinating.
Always, I do the same.
Yeah,
maybe
really?
Okay. For different things. But I go to square one 3-4 times in a season. How to get open.
Oh, really? Okay.
You know, 3-on-0, how to get open.
Yeah.
Because when you're in the season, you are at square 99, but you forget square one.
Yeah.
So you need to refresh it. Because this is playing the right way.
Yes.
Well, fundamentals. Fundamentals are killed in the last 5 years. So
yes. Looking at the time, I think we have to come to our BIVA quickfire round. And just want to say that this is, I mean, it's killing me that I have to leave and you have to leave, because we could talk, I think, for another 2 hours. I mean, I could. I don't know if you're still stimulated, but this is, I don't know if Abu likes the coaching philosophy part of it, but that's the way it went. So here are the questions.
Abu doesn't like anything.
I wouldn't say that, but here we go with our BIVA quickfire round questions. is togetherness what this team, you know, really makes does togetherness or the togetherness of this team really make this team special? This is one trait you would kind of point out when you look at this team.
No. Acceptance.
Acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because this is the trademark of our team. We accept the flaws of everybody.
Okay. And you work around. Yeah, we already talked about that, right? So the second question would be, there was a video I saw of you like making pizza.
Mm-hmm.
So the question
we do
is
it every game day.
Every game day. Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe I should be on a game day then.
It's very good, believe me.
I mean, I have my own little pizza oven at home, uh-huh. But I think I can leave some pointers. So what are the similarities between a perfect pizza and a basketball team?
A lot. You need to have the right ingredients. You need to take care of the ingredients. You need time to make your team bloom.
Put it in the fridge for like 6 hours. Yeah.
Wait. Don't rush. Okay, use your hands, but not too much, because then you destroy what you did. Okay, have the right discipline. Using the things from A, B, C, not B before A. Okay, and then be ready to enjoy what you're doing.
And maybe you also need a lot of heat, right, to make it perfect.
It comes with
heat pressure, I suppose the same. Okay. In Germany, people say like Munich is like the most northern town of Italy. Is that
happy for that?
Yeah,
I'm happy for that.
You're happy for that, but is it true?
I don't know if it's true, but so, I like Munich. I love Munich.
All right, perfect. That's good. So on the last question, I think it's past 9:30. Why would you hate me if I drank a cappuccino now? Why would you chastise me? What's wrong with drinking cappuccino after 9:30?
Because you cannot drink cappuccino after. Cappuccino is something that you can drink, that we drink early in the morning for a quick and light breakfast. Okay, milk is very difficult to pair in any kind of food. Very difficult. Okay, milk is superpower. So basically, it's very rare to have a cappuccino after 10 o'clock. And in Italy, if somebody really wants the milk, takes a small espresso with a small amount of milk cream on.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. No cappuccino after 10.
See, I'm from Wolfsburg. I don't know, Wolfsburgo. And obviously, a lot of Italians there. I already knew that. I already knew that. So, obviously, I can't let you go because a lot of fans listening are kind of hand-wringing and like asking themselves, when will Andrea Tinchieri decide where he will coach next year?
I have to make my own thoughts. What happened with the BBL is something that is hurting me on a personal way.
Yeah.
I'm ready to accept the consequences of my mistakes. I always did it, and I will always do it. I'm never afraid to raise my hand and say, I did a mistake, okay? But it's very difficult for me to accept things that are not fair. And this bothers me every day.
And I guess you need to take your time, right? Because you're in this season.
I'm taking my time, but the wound is not healing.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, it's a pretty somber note to finish this podcast, but I don't have anything else.
You made a question, I gave you an answer.
Yes, it's a great answer. I just don't want to leave the fans just like sad at home. I don't know if any. I don't know. I don't have anything else. Do you have anything else to say?
I have to figure out how to deal with this thing that happened. And I'm not good with unfair situations. Mm. I'm really not good.
Yeah, who is?
I'm not good with somebody, you know. I pay the price for my mistakes every time, and that's it. I would like that somebody else can say I did a mistake.
Yeah.
Because it's, maybe it's the small thing that can help, but I don't see it.
The Schiedsgericht kind of took the punishment away.
It's not enough.
It's not enough.
Okay. This is the minimum.
Yeah.
But the system.
System is wrong. Well, maybe the BBL listen to this podcast as well.
Oh, don't believe so.
Don't believe so. We'll see. I send it to him. Abu still send it to him, and maybe they'll come and talk to you and admit that they were wrong.
Whenever I do something, I want to leave something.
Mm.
I came here in Germany years ago. I did my best to put Bamberg and Germany on the map of basketball. We had a trademark of how we are doing the things. I came here with the same goal. Leave a heritage, leave something that can last, do the things in a different way. And I believe that I helped German basketball.
I believe
that I can expect at least respect.
Yeah. That's a bare minimum. Coach, I know you have to go. Thanks for your time.
No problem.
Das war sie, die 13. Folge von Open Court, powered by Bayer. Ich hoffe, dass ich auch für euch spreche, wenn ich sage, dass dieser Podcast noch eine Weile bei mir bleiben wird. Wahrscheinlich muss ich ihn echt auch noch mal ein zweites Mal anhören, da es so viel gibt, was ich echt noch mal reflektieren will. Wenn euch diese Episode gefallen hat, lasst uns gerne eine Rezension da, zum Beispiel bei Apple Music, empfehlt den Podcast weiter und falls ihr euch ein bestimmtes Thema oder einen bestimmten Gesprächspartner wünscht, schickt uns gerne eure Anregungen oder Wünsche an opencourt@fcbayern.com. Vielen Dank für eure Zeit und bis zum nächsten Mal.